the crew on 95.5 KLOS. Matter of fact, I think we have here. Hey, hey.
Hello.
Nikki Six. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. What's going on?
Yeah. Well, hey, just here living the dream.
Yeah, the dream.
Getting through. I mean, it's been pretty crazy. Los Angeles, the fires, a lot of earthquakes lately. Jeez.
Yeah, nuts. We were there for a second and came back up, got out of there.
Yeah? When were you here?
We were just there because we sold our house and moved to Wyoming. So we were just there packing, but about a week ago. It was crazy.
Yeah, I saw a tweet from you a few days ago. It said you live on top of a mountain with no mailbox, no cell service, no neighbors. But it's been good for your creativity, I guess, right?
Oh, it's the best. The best.
Yeah. What's the vibe like in Wyoming right now? Do you, it's been a while since I've been. Do you get out and see people, or do you kind of just keep to yourself right now?
No, it's super, no BS type of people.
Yep.
Everybody's extremely outdoors driven. Fishing, hunting, hiking, going on the river, going up the lake. And because of that, everyone's extremely healthy. And
yeah,
there's no entertainment business here. So you're not dealing with any of that kind of stuff. You're just dealing with blue collar people, which
yeah.
I relate to because I came from Idaho in the 70s, which is, you know, it's 40 minutes to Idaho from where we live.
That's cool.
And just a lot of the same environment. You know, I go back, I go on the road, I see all these beautiful cities. But as far as being a musician and a painter and a person that writes books and stuff like that, I felt it was maybe time and a better place to raise my daughter.
For sure. Yeah. My aunt has a ranch out there and I always come back revived, and you know, that open space is really nice. Breathe in the fresh air.
Yeah, for sure.
You've had some time to kill this year instead of being on the road like planned. Are you able to find the positive in that? I mean, as bummed as you were initially, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, for me, there was the tour was one thing, but the thing I've been really focusing on was the musical. And so, you know, the song Maybe It's Time was written, put on the last 6 a.m. album with the goal being that it was going to be the tie-in for the musical, the messaging, so to speak. And we had talked about doing something with high-end pop singers, country singers, and raise the conversation up to a more of a pop level about opiate epidemic and the and solutions.
Yeah.
But when the musical got shut down for now, mm-hmm. and then the tour got shut down, it was like, well, what are we going to do with this really cool song? And kind of came up with the idea of doing something a little more blue collar, a little more down in the, you know, rock,
yep.
in the rock world, you know. And we talked to a couple country guys and a couple alternative guys. And my first conversation was, I called Flash and I said, hey, got this idea. Rob Cavallo is going to produce this track, and we want to do a little version, different version of it. And would you be interested in playing on it?
Now you're talking about Maybe It's Time. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe It's Time. Yeah. Did I not mention that? Probably not.
No, you know what? You did. I'm going to play that in a minute too.
So Flash was like, dude, yes. And I go, do you want to hear the song? And he goes, I don't have to, because this is an important subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing happened with all these other different artists, except for Corey Taylor. He called me.
Oh, really?
And he said, hey, my tech knows Flash's tech, and Flash is doing this song, and I want to do it, too.
Right on.
And then Def Leppard, I was talking to Joe Elliott, because we were all getting ready to go on the tour, and he's like, what are you doing? And I told him, and he's like, well, can I stay on it? So it was just like, this
wow.
really organic, cool thing. And then we wanted to figure out a way to raise money for the Global Recovery Initiative Foundation.
Right.
Which they are then using that money to get out and work with early recovery, helping spread the message that erasing the stigma. There's a lot
yeah.
of footwork that goes into it.
Yeah.
Money.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And, you know, I've seen stories about how alcohol consumption's way up during this pandemic. I mean, there could not be a better time for what you're doing. September's recovery month, too.
Yeah. I mean, look at when this, I remember when we were back in LA and they announced the first 15-day stay-at-home orders, I just turned to my wife and I go, man, this is like a really important time to keep this message going,
mm-hmm.
because I believe that domestic violence is going to go up. Alcoholism is going to go up. Drug addiction is going to go up.
Yep.
Violence in general. There's just, it just keeps going. And people are feeling isolated.
Yep.
Imagine being somebody that's dealing with depression and isolation.
Yeah, right.
And now you can't go anywhere.
Right.
For people that are in early recovery, even people that are not in early recovery like me, you can't go to AA meetings. You can't meet with your sponsor. There's so many things. What about rehab facilities? Is this a good time to put somebody into a rehab facility?
Yeah.
They could, you know, we know what's happening in nursing homes. So now you have people that are like white knuckling it, like trying to get through. It's a really important time to have these conversations and to raise money. And somebody asked me the other day, like, you know, what's my affiliation? Am I red or am I blue? And I'll be honest with you right now, I don't want to divide people over politics. What I'd like to do is unify people under this color, green.
Yeah.
I'm asking people to donate their money to the Global Recovery Initiative to help people who are dealing with drug and alcohol addiction.
Yeah, I love that you're doing that. And congrats on being sober. I mean, your story is so amazing. I read Heroin Diaries when it first came out, 2007, 13 years ago. That's crazy. That was the first time we were given a true up close look at your past struggle with addiction. I think that was really, you know, a genuine look at that. I mean, do you think now, look at the big picture and think, hey, this is why I made it through? With all your activism and being at the forefront of breaking that rock star stigma, you know, that it has to include drugs and alcohol, which it doesn't. This is a big reason why.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, let's face it. Rock bands are not that important. Like, they think they're important, but, like, we don't really do anything to change the planet, right? We are entertainment. We're entertainment.
Yeah.
Right? That's what we do. We write music that is from our soul.
Yes.
Stuff that we believe in. And we play it for people, and they go see us live, and everybody has a great time.
And that does touch lives. That does touch lives.
It does, but not like this. Like, this is a different thing. Once I did the Heroin Diaries, I was like, you know, I got a bigger purpose in life.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was, you know, like I said, we moved to Wyoming, and I'm at a gas station the other day in my four-wheel drive truck, and this guy comes up to me and goes, man, I heard that you moved here, and I'm so stoked because I read your book, and I'd had 14 overdoses.
Wow.
And I'm clean and sober. I'm clean and sober. Like, it happens in truck stops. It happens all over the world. And so I know that what I'm talking about is connecting with people enough that I can feel like at the end of my life, like, I did something actually important.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally get that. The movie Snow Babies, and just by the trailers I've seen, you know, I think any of us who have or have had teenagers, this is one of the biggest fears, drugs, and it all starts out as fun and games, never ends that way.
No, it never does end that way.
No, and I love now that there's this group of artists that have come together, this powerhouse for sobriety. I think it's awesome, and you must be proud of that, like we talked about, helping to change that rock and roll stereotype, because you think rock and roll, you think drugs, of course, the sex, drugs, rock and roll stigma thing, the stereotype. Chatting with Nikki Sixx right now, by the way.
It's time to change. Listen, that doesn't mean you can't go out there and crush it musically.
Right.
You can't go out there and crush it musically. But I think that using that as your brand is not helping people at this point with what's going on in the planet. I mean, listen, let's just get down to basics. You know, forget rock and roll. And, you know, all this stuff is great because they're talking about it, but the truth is what's happening is blue-collar people, people on the street, people that are working every day, people that work next to you, people that I know, everybody knows, are dealing with real-life situations, like getting a natural injury, like breaking your ankle or breaking your wrist or getting a surgery, and you go to doctors, and doctors are prescribing pain medication, as they should. They should prescribe pain medication in moderation.
Yeah.
So I know in my research and my experience that you create an opiate epidemic after 7 days. Actually, earlier, but after 7 days, if you take pain medication at a high enough dose for 7 days for an injury, and then you don't take it anymore, you will go into a version of a withdrawal.
Yep.
So what's happening when doctors are prescribing 30 days, and then you go back and you go, you know, my back still kind of hurts. Oh, don't worry about it. Here's another 30-day script. You're breeding addicts.
Yeah, and it
and I think that's something. Yeah, we got to talk about that.
I agree. It decreases your pain thresholds too, from what I understand. And so, if you can get by on Tylenol, that's my motto. You know, after a surgery, yeah. I try and stick to stuff like that.
That's what I did. I had to have a surgery, and I took medication for 3 days. It was a pretty extreme surgery.
Yeah.
And then I went on to Tylenol. But you know, these conversations that we're having right now should be happening at dinner tables.
Yeah.
They should be happening. Yes, in the press. Yes, it's great that we have rock stars and role models out there talking about it, but it's got to get down to in the workplace.
We need some
clear direction, just like the coronavirus, from the administration and from the next administration. This is life and death stuff that we're talking about.
Yeah, it is. So I would ask you this, Nikki, if you could give anyone advice who is out there struggling with opioid addiction or depression, alcoholism, drugs of any kind, what would that be?
Well, one of the reasons we're donating all the money to Global Recovery Initiative is that that's a place that you can go to get the answers that you're looking for. And that would be one of the first places I would recommend you go.
Very cool. Thanks for checking in. I know that it's a quick check-in today. After Snow Babies, what's next for you this year, Nikki?
Well, I we just moved, so we're kind of dealing with that. But I'm trying to build a workshop so I can get back into painting and songwriting.
Nice.
And a few other things that I'm interested in trying my hand at. I'm trying to turn this negative into a positive.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, everyone's doing their best, what we can do. And for me, my best is stay creative.
Thanks for checking in, Nikki Sixx, keeping it positive. Best to you and the fam. Enjoy Wyoming. And hopefully we'll get back to the live shows sooner than later, I'm hoping.
Yeah, eventually.
Yeah, we'll get there. Thank you, Nikki.
Thank you. Come